Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Michael, thank you so much for coming in studio this morning.
Hey, I very much appreciate the opportunity. Thanks.
So we've now talked with James Gardner. We've talked with Michael Gaynor. Again, we have not talked with Senator Sean Ryan since before March. So hopefully we'll be able to change that. Michael, you are running for mayor of Buffalo on the independent line, correct?
That is correct. Yeah, it's called Restore Buffalo line.
The Restore Buffalo line. So you'll be on the ballot in November. Before we get to the current campaign, let's go back, because we were talking about this off the air. The Democratic Forum, now you intended to run for the Democratic nominee.
Yes, that's correct. I petitioned as a Democrat, predominantly because, you know, the city is majority Democrat, I'll be honest with you. I've always been a fairly independent voice, but if you want to participate in politics here in Western New York, it's mostly a single party area. Right. And most of my neighbors on the east side of Buffalo are Democrats. So in the interest of wanting to engage with the public and be, I did petition as a Democrat, and I am a registered Democrat. Full disclosure there, too. But what happened was we got all of our petitions and then our petitions were challenged. And I think being a relative novice in this process, we did make a clerical error. I mean, it literally was a paperwork error, very simple, something that probably would have been overlooked by most people. But, you know, when you throw a bunch of staff resources at it, they went through every one of our signatures. They categorized and coded them. I was served with about 2 inches worth of paperwork to appear in state Supreme Court over that issue. So, wow. And in the end, the judge, you know, there is pretty strong precedent. When people petition, you'll find that most candidates do not go out and get their own signatures. Okay, they just don't. They have volunteers get them, or Democratic committee people, or Republican committee people. And the reason why is because case law is quite clear. If you as a candidate make any kind of mistake or error, paperwork, signature, or otherwise, they throw out the whole petition. So, and that was what happened. So they threw out the whole petition because of an issue on one page, and you know, I even wrote a whole blog about it on my page. There is no lesser word than fraud, quote unquote, when you make a mistake. And the judge said as much in the courtroom. He was just like, you know, this obviously there's not real capital F fraud here. It was just a mistake, right. But it's the way that it all, you know, pans out, and that's how case law works. You know, you make a mistake, you're out.
Looking at that process on the Democratic side, with you and the other candidates, do you think that the Democrat Party of Erie County had their favorite candidate before the first interview?
Oh, they had a preferred candidate the whole way. Yeah. And that's a big part of the issue, I think, with Democratic politics in Western New York, or I would just say single party politics, where you have a party that controls the mass majority of the electorate, is that there wasn't a lot of debate encouraged. You know, really, we should not be endorsing a candidate until the primary election. You know, the primary is the opportunity for the voters to weigh in on who they think is the best candidate. And then the party should follow suit. But in this case, they did their own, you know, behind closed doors committee forums where you were only invited if you were a committee person. And I was there because I'm a committee person. But you were only invited with your committee person. It was closed doors, no media. And then they emerged from that process and made a decision even before the zone chairs even voted. So, like, for me, that process is not very democratic. And what it does is it really disengages folks and disempowers people in the party from thinking, well, then why am I even voting if the party is already going to decide who they want to be in the November election, if they're going to already decide the winner? And now the party, their position is, oh, you know, because historically, if you win the primary, you win the election because we have a single party area. They're already announcing Sean Ryan the victor. And it's like, no, there are three candidates in this race. There's a Republican, there's an independent, and there's a Democrat. And for the first election in 20 years, do we not owe it to our constituents, to every neighborhood, to every community, to every voter, to actually hear clear and concise debate, robust debate, discussion, conversations about the issues or the hopes or a long-term vision for our city? What do people believe is possible for Buffalo? Like 20 years ago, where were you 20 years ago?
I was going to say 20 years ago, the last time Byron Brown was not running for mayor of Buffalo, junior in high school.
Right.
Junior in high school 20 years ago. So yeah, it's been a while.
And 20 years ago, I had just arrived in Buffalo. And so all I've known in Buffalo is a mayoral leader that, and this is a big, it very much hints to why I'm running, but a politics that's vindictive, that is not accessible to the people, that's not accessible to good ideas. Like, I was inspired to come to Buffalo because of the amazing potential I've seen. I've lived all over. I've lived on the West Coast, the East Coast, New York City, Boston, Maine. And when I came here, there was something very different about the community, the culture, the spirit of the people. Like, it was very welcoming, very open arms, very different from arriving in Boston, just as a contrast. And that spirit, it combined with the resources that are here, you know, the natural resources, the architecture, the arts, and all of the communities and neighborhoods that I visited, like, that to me was like, this is where I want to live. You know, this is where I want to create my next chapter in my life. And we did some great things. You know, we started the Buffalo Reuse Store. We started the Foundry, which is a small business incubator on the east side. And we created jobs, and we were doing innovative things that were solving problems. You know, we're looking at creative uses of vacant spaces. We were starting a business around vacant buildings so that we could channel those materials back to the neighborhood instead of burying them in a landfill. Just common sense solutions that brought more opportunity, more economic vitality, and more, beauty, to be honest with you, to the east side of Buffalo, predominantly where we were based. But it was a big picture vision. And I think that's how, and we did that all with just sheer will. Like, we did have some support from the state to get started through a research and development grant on deconstruction, the method that we were using to dismantle buildings. But we mostly did it on our own. And after that first year, the majority of our income was earned income. And by the time I left Reuse 3 years later, almost 90% of our income was earned income. Wow. So that was through our store, that was through our community programs, that was through our service offerings, and we were still providing an immense value to the neighborhood. If you think about, we were doing, I think, close to 500 sales a week, and the average sale was $20, right? Half of the prices of reclaimed good, the price of reclaimed good is about half of new. So we're selling doors for $25-$30 at the time, you know, sinks and windows and cabinets. And people are like, oh, vinyl windows, you need new vinyl windows. Yeah, there's a lot of low-income people in my community that can't afford a $50 vinyl window or $150 vinyl window. But they come in and replace the sash so that at least they have glass and some protection from the outdoors. So that was how we were connecting the dots. And on numerous occasions, trying to go to City Hall, all right, we had money from the U.S. Conference of Mayors, millions of dollars to train out-of-school young adults. When I first came to Buffalo, the dropout rate was 50%. And all of these young people go into the streets, right? Because the educational system had failed them. You know, if you look at how we train and we educate kids these days, it's a one-track path for college. Right? Everybody should go to college. Well, what about the kids that learn differently? Right. One of the people that are more kinesthetic, more hands-on, like I was, right? What about people that want to build stuff or take things apart? Like, what about our trades? Like, we've defunded our trades. You know, the city of Buffalo is the only local district that doesn't have a contract with Erie One BOCES, which is a very low-hanging fruit for getting young people technical training at a very low cost, $1,000 per young person. To participate in Erie One BOCES. That is mostly paid for by the state. The cost to the local district is minimal. And what it will do is capture kids and give them a technical skill or a training opportunity so that they can leave their high school experience and either go directly into a job or go into a union apprenticeship program or any of the multiple training programs at Northland. We need to think about how we more efficiently use the resources that we have here and the assets that we have here, and we're not doing that. And then when you have political leadership that's failing us and turning its back on its neighbors and not empowering really good ideas, it's enough to for somebody like me to get frustrated and be like,
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Like, well, then hell with it. I'm going to leave Buffalo, which I almost did in 2017, you know, because I was frustrated. We had money in the pipeline from the neighborhood stabilization program back when Obama was president to reclaim and stabilize vacant lots. The city wouldn't sell us the lots, turn them into pocket parks on the east side where there's large, you know, widespread vacancy, you know, 7,000 to 10,000 vacant lots in the city of Buffalo, but trying to focus on more dense community areas and build assets. Like, that's what we need to do. Training young people, giving them job skills, getting them off the streets. Like, that's how we address public safety. No, not just building communities from the ground up, but addressing a whole host of other issues that plague our communities and our city. So these are the big picture ideas that we're thinking about and we're talking about. But when the Democratic Party won't even sit at the table to discuss them, how do we get to a different place?
Right.
Right. This race is not over. We are going to engage with the community. We are going to engage with voters all across the city. We've got forums lined up. We are visiting block clubs and community associations, going door to door. And we are inviting people to get involved and be part of the conversation, not to be on the outside looking in, which is where I've been for the last 20 years and where I think a lot of City of Buffalo residents feel in this political culture.
Yeah, you talk about, you know, talking to the residents. You don't see Sean Ryan talking anywhere. He's standing at crosswalks doing social media videos. You mentioned public safety, and that is something that has come up again. The senator hasn't addressed it, but public safety, crime in the city of Buffalo, Michael Gaynor, how do you look at that? And you kind of mentioned it there on how to start addressing it.
Yeah, I think you start with investing in neighborhoods. And we've seen this in other big cities across the country, right? There's crime because there's instability. There's crime because there's poverty. You know, there's crime because there's not enough economic activity. When we invest and bring focus and attention to our neighborhoods, it starts to change the equation. And we also have to change the culture of City Hall, how we do our policing. And I'm actually really encouraged by some of the work that Mayor Scanlon's doing right now with his foot patrol units. But what he is, you know, and I've talked to some police chiefs in the city, and their feedback is, we really love the program. We would like to do more of it. But they're strained. They're strained in our city by a lack of resources and by so many different calls coming into 911. And a lot of it is social service calls, homelessness calls, right? Drug abuse calls, things like this. Things that it doesn't really make sense for policing to work on. But we do need neighborhood outreach in those areas. So my solution is, how do we get state money that's committed to those resources more directly to the people that need it on the street? Like, I think a lot of times our state agencies and these social service providers are set up for people to come to them. But a lot of people aren't going to go to those.
Right.
But what you see in other countries and in other cities even are street outreach teams where you have social service workers on the streets hanging out with people, creating connections with people, intervening before things escalate and get out of control, trying to direct people to the social services that are available. It's tough, though, because there's not enough resources for the need. But that is how we get the greatest mileage out of that. Putting cops on the streets where they're building relationships, they're building trust with our neighborhood leaders, with our business leaders, so that there isn't this separation of the community from the police. And I think that's what a lot of people feel. There's a lot of fear. You know, before there was the drug regulation, the change in the marijuana laws, right? Young people were afraid. A lot of people were afraid because there was cops that were shaking down young kids for dime bags of marijuana. Like, and is that how we want to be spending our police, finite police resources? Like, we need to think about, you know, the best way to solve these problems. And they're not just my ideas. These are ideas that have been proven in other places and in other cities where when you invest in job training, when you invest in summer jobs, we cut summer jobs, the mayor's summer youth program this year. So all of these young people that would have had a connection, right? Now they don't have that connection, right? So I actually have an initiative through my campaign and when I'm mayor to actually plug these kids back in. And it's called City Action Corps. And it's a year-long program where young people are doing purposeful work in the neighborhood, getting those requisite training, job readiness skills that they didn't get, you know, during a technical training program in high school, right? Plugging them into something purposeful, giving them work to do that actually improves what the aesthetic of the neighborhood, right? Cleaning up the neighborhoods, pocket parks. We want to plant 100,000 trees in the next 10 years. Why is that good? It stabilizes neighborhoods. It improves neighborhood health. And it also starts to green and improve the quality of life in every one of our East Side neighborhoods and across the city as well. I talk about the East Side a lot. I'm an East Side. I've been living largely on the East Side for the last 20 years. I've been running businesses on the East Side. All of my efforts have been there because that's where I see the greatest need. And as long as the East Side of Buffalo lags, the whole city is going to be lagging. It's like just dragging a big lead ball around. And we need to see a transformation there. Which is, you know, why my whole involvement over the Humboldt Parkway has emerged over the last 2 years. And I think we've spoken on the air about that.
Yep.
So those are some of my big picture ideas. But I had a conversation with someone once and they were like, if you could do one thing, actually, I think it wasn't me. Somebody told me this story and they had a conversation with a police commissioner. And they said, if you could do one thing to decrease the amount of crime in your city, what would it be? And their response was, give every person a job. Because when people have economic supports and when they're plugged in and then have a feeling of connection and they have a feeling of pride and they have a sense of worth and a sense of purpose, right? You don't need to commit a crime,
right?
You are part of society. And I think that that's the direction that we need to be focusing on. And that's the direction we need to invest in.
We've got 2 minutes. Now, mm-hmm. You've talked about the East Side, which obviously a lot of attention needs to be on.
Yep.
But you also talked about jobs and the economic hub of the city of Buffalo, many would argue, should be downtown Buffalo.
Yes, sir.
Mayor Michael Gaynor, what does that look like? With you as mayor to bring downtown back. Right now, 25,000 less people go downtown than before the pandemic. How do you fix that?
Well, we fix it by rebranding Buffalo. Rebranding it as not a place that you want to stay away from. I don't know if you guys have seen the big mural, Keep Buffalo a Secret. I am saying tell the world about Buffalo, right? Because there is no reason why we should have declining population here. Yes, there is New York State. New York State has its own stigma, right? But employers don't just look at that. They're looking at the quality of the workforce. They're looking at quality of life. They're looking at what that community can contribute. They're looking at affordability. They're looking at workforce. They're looking at all of these things. And guess what? Buffalo checks every one of those boxes. It is a great place to live and do business. Like, as long as you can invest in, you know, some heavy duty winter wear for a few months, like the 8 or 9 months of the year are amazing. Right? And I think that's what we need to do. And how do we do that? We do that by getting people to stop here and visit here. 9 million tourists a year go to Niagara Falls, USA. All right? I'm not talking about Canada. I'm talking about Niagara Falls, USA. If we get half of those tourists to stop in downtown Buffalo and spend one day here, right? That's $1.5 billion investment each year. Okay, what does that do to transform our downtown restaurants and our shops and our businesses? And not only that, when people stay here and they stop here and they visit here, they start to think about, you know, living here, opening a business here, actually moving their business here, just like I did. I was here 4 hours and I called my mom and I said, Mom, I'm moving to Buffalo. And she's like, don't tell me that. Don't tell me that until you're definitely going to move it. She knows I'm a flake and, you know, I've been all over. I travel all over the world. But the point is that we have to sell what Buffalo offers to the world, right? We have infinite amounts of commercial space downtown. We've got a creative community here. Like, we should be attracting small businesses and small entrepreneurs, and we need to be very proactive about that. We don't want to be passive. We have to create a whole new genre and brand, and the mayor is the person to do that. Because the mayor has a huge megaphone, they get a lot of publicity and a lot of press. And when you have a vision that speaks to the people and speaks to what the next generation of Buffalo is going to look like, it really sends a message to people all across this community and across this country that Buffalo is a place to be.
Michael Gaynor running for mayor on the Restore Buffalo line.
Yes, sir.
And Michael, I'm sure we'll talk between now and Election Day. Thank you so much for coming in this morning.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Again,
thank you so much.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.